It's August. Days are long and hot and frequently smoky. We'll spend a bit of time talking poetry this week. Today, Maggie Smith is the guest. JX producer and morning news host and published poet Angela Decker handles that interview. Angela, welcome to the studio.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be here. Maggie Smith is the award-winning author of Good Bones, The Well Speaks of Its Own Poison, Lamp of the Body, and the national bestseller collection of essays Keep Moving, Notes on Loss, Creativity, and Change. Her poem, Good Bones, was originally published in 2015, and in 2016, after the U.S. presidential election, it went viral internationally and has been translated into nearly a dozen languages. Public Radio International called the poem the poem of 2016. She worked for several years in trade book and educational publishing and works as a freelance writer and editor and also teaches creative writing. Her latest poetry collection is Goldenrod, which was just released last month. Maggie Smith, welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. You were born and raised in Ohio, and you're still living there, right?
I am. It is very strange to hear things like widespread or patchy smoke from a weather forecast, living in central Ohio, I have to say.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I guess you guys wouldn't have to.
You guys nothing. Have fresh air. No. As a poet, I was like, wow, that's a very poetic and interesting and ominous forecast.
Exactly. It is. It's looking pretty ominous out the window right now as well. With Goldenrod, there's several tributes both to Ohio and Ohio poets. And you've got three centos, and I believe you've done a series of centos. I'm wondering if you could explain the cento form for our listeners and then talk about those three poems.
Yeah, so a cento is an Italian form. It's basically collage. So the poet doesn't write any original lines herself. She chooses lines from other poets and assembles them into a new poem. So the art of it is really in assembly and sort of building one to the next, to the next, to the next line. So the series of poems, all titled Ohio Cento, there are three in the new book, Goldenrod, are all poems built from lines by other Ohio poets. So it's sort of my homage to the literary landscape here. So either poets born in Ohio or poets living here now.
Oh, wow. Wow. And I noticed in the back of the book, there's a lot of Ohio poets. It's kind of
yes.
A rich place for poetry. Do you mind reading one of them?
No, not at all. This is the first one in the book. Ohio Cento. The sun comes up and soon the you-know-what will hit the you-know-what. But this is what it means to have our life. We need a break from this ruined country. Sometimes it feels like it has just begun and it's over. What we know of ourselves gets compressed, layered. Remembering is an anniversary, every minute a commemoration of being or thinking or its opposite, a strip of negatives. Some days I don't even know how to be. I sink my feet past time in the Olentangy, as if loneliness didn't make us in some absurd blessing, if there even is an us. When are we most ourselves, and when the least? Is it too late except to say too late and hear the whole world take a rain check? I worry it is.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
So I didn't write any of those lines. Other Ohio poets wrote them all individually, and then I pulled books off of my shelf and started hunting for one line and then one that might follow that. And then how could I finish the sentence? Oh, this line could finish the sentence. And then what's the next idea? And so it's actually a great assignment to give oneself if you're not feeling particularly inspired to write a poem at the time, but you really want to. You can just go to a bookshelf, pull off some of your favorites and see what you can build.
Oh, wow. It's a fun exercise. And it's also, like you said, it's just a great way if you can't think of what to write. But it's
yes.
Kind of this treasure hunt within your poem. That's
yeah,
terrific.
Exactly. And it's really no different from going to a magazine and cutting out pictures and gluing them to a piece of paper and in order to make a new design. It's the same thing, but with language.
Wow. I hope everybody listening does that. That sounds like a kick.
I love that idea. There's some summer homework.
Yeah, for everybody. you mentioned in an interview once that your poetry says something about the act of seeing or envisioning. And I'm wondering how much that perspective kind of comes up in this collection.
Oh, it's huge in this book. I mean, I think probably everything I've ever written has something to do with seeing or perspective or re-seeing. I mean, even the word revise literally means to see again. So it's built into the act of writing itself, is learning how to see things anew. And I was thinking a lot when putting this book together about something that the artist Robert Rauschenberg said about the job of an artist, and that's that it's to keep people's eyes open. And I think about that a lot in terms of poetry, that what usually drags me to the page is an image or a little bit of language where I see things in a sort of unusual way and I want to work it out for myself on the page. And that's, I think, what I go to poems for too. I love when I read a poem by another writer and I have that sort of click feeling because they've made me see something or think about something, or maybe they've articulated something in a way that I hadn't quite done for myself yet. Mm-hmm. And that changes you, right? I mean, you can't, once you learn how to see things in a new way, you can't go back. That actually changes you as a person. And so I like to say I go to poems to be changed, both as a writer and as a reader.
Oh, I love that. And we're going to pause for a short break, and we'll be right back with Maggie Smith, author of Goldenrod. One moment. We're back on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Angela Decker, speaking with poet Maggie Smith about her new collection of poems, Goldenrod. You can join the conversation. Call 800-838-3760, or you can email us at jx@jeffnet.org. Maggie, thanks for rejoining us. I love
really
what you
good to be here.
Thank you. I love what you said about having an image just drag you to the page. And I'm wondering is that something that happened with the title poem Goldenrod?
It is. Yeah, that's really a road trip poem. That poem was born with pen and paper from the passenger seat of a car traveling the highway and looking out and seeing a field of flowers and thinking, oh, goldenrod, and then sort of on second thought thinking, actually, I have no idea what those are. I've always called them goldenrod, and yet I have no knowledge to back that up. And that the poem sort of unspooled from there.
That's why the beginning is, I'm going to ask you to just read the poem because the beginning kind of cracked me up because I think so many people can lean into that, or you're not sure and you just sort of say the thing that you think it is.
Yeah, I'm happy to read it. This is Goldenrod. I'm no botanist. If you're the color of sulfur and growing at the roadside, you're goldenrod. You don't care what I call you, whatever you were born as. You don't know your own name. But driving near Peoria, the sky pink-orange, the sun bobbing at the horizon, I see everything is what it is, exactly, in spite of the words I use. Black cows, barns falling in on themselves. You, dear flowers born with a highway view, forgive me if I've mistaken you. Goldenrod, whatever your name is, you are with your own kind. Look, the meadow is a mirror full of you, your reflection repeating. Whatever you are, I see you wild yellow, and I would let you name me.
Thank you. Thank you. You said that this was a road trip poem, and I'm wondering, because you've got kids and you've got a busy life, where do these poems come from? Do most of them come kind of outside of sitting at your desk with a pen, or do...
Yes, I rarely write at a desk. I joke now that the office is the place where I Zoom, but it's not really the place where I write. I write usually on the go, and that's sort of how life works, right? So I carry a notebook, and I'm lucky now to have a smartphone that I can type notes into. So this morning I was watching a nature documentary with my son, and they said something about a kind of bird known as a clock bird because it has this tail like a pendulum that clicks back and forth like an old grandfather clock. And I whipped out my phone and wrote that down. And who knows if it will ever make it into a poem. But I think of myself sort of, speaking of birds, like a magpie, you know, looking for little shiny bits of things and collecting them. And if I'm lucky, and if I find the time, and if my brain is sort of primed with enough quiet and stillness and just right, I might be able to make a poem from it.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And now I really want in the future to see the clockbird poem that comes.
They're beautiful. They're beautiful.
Oh, man. And you mentioned your son. You write a lot about being a parent, and kind of helping your kids navigate the world as they age. And I'm not sure your children's ages, but have you found that as they age, do you write about them in a different way, or do you write for them in a different way?
It's funny. I think I've always written about children even before I had them. I sort of wrote about hypothetical children, or I wrote a lot about remembering my own childhood. It seems like such a magical time when you're getting oriented to the world. Like, you've just shown up in this place that someone else brought you to, and you have to learn everything from scratch. And I find that it's like the perfect weather for poetry is being in a new place, which is why travel is inspiring, I think, to us as adults. And so, you know, when I'm writing from a perspective of a parent, oftentimes I'm writing with my kids in the poems, but really I'm writing more about myself. I'm writing about the experience of being their mother more than I'm writing necessarily about them as people. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that as they get older, they'll tell their own stories. But most of the poems that include them, or at least a lot of them, actually include scraps of dialogue. I'm always listening to the things that they say and writing them down. And so their words, both in Goldenrod and in my last book of poems, Good Bones, their words are woven into the poems. I'm just sort of in love with the way they see the world, because the things I take for granted, they don't yet. And so they keep me sort of alive and awake and young in some ways, in the ways that they see the world.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And also just re-envisioning, again, just another offering that great kid perspective.
Yeah.
This is Angela Decker. I'm on the Jefferson Exchange speaking with poet Maggie Smith about her new collection, Goldenrod. Feel free to call and ask Maggie a question, 800-838-3760, or you can email us at jx@jeffnet.org. And wow, technology, we have a question. And this is from Amy in Ashland. And she says, hi, Maggie, could you talk about your soundtrack list for Goldenrod and how that relates to your writing process? Do some songs evoke poems, or does the poem's subject matter suggest a song? You've got a soundtrack list. That's cool.
I have, yeah. So I've been doing this for years now, and now thanks to things like Spotify, you can actually make a playlist for a book and share it with readers. So last week when Goldenrod came out, I shared the Goldenrod playlist on Spotify, and it's a lot of poems that I was listening to as I wrote, particularly like the last poems in the book, songs I listened to during lockdown and, during 2020 in particular, but also just favorites. And so most, I would say that the songs themselves didn't inspire the poems, but then going through the book, I was able to either remember songs I listened to a lot as I was writing them, or I thought, oh, the Nico Case song, Animal, would be a perfect song to add because of some of the poems in this book. Or there are some poems that deal with space in the book, or deal with magic tricks, or deal with trees and rivers, or jokes. And so I was able to sort of go into my little music library in my brain and think of songs that I thought would thematically, sort of pull in that way. So if readers listen to the playlist and read the book, they'll more than likely be able to sort of match up what I was thinking of song-wise with the poems.
Oh, that's a great idea. And a lot of writers work entirely, they want that silence, like I said, at the desk in a quiet place. And so some of these would you also listen to them as you're writing?
Oh, yeah. I don't listen. I'm one of the sort of rare people, I think, that I don't need quiet to write. In fact, I prefer not to have quiet. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of writers listen to instrumental music only as they write, so that the words from the lyrics don't sort of interrupt their own thought process. But I'm not one of those people. So I listen to music with lyrics pretty much all the time, whether I'm writing a poem or, doing the dishes or walking my dog, and sometimes even when I sleep. So, sometimes a happy accident will happen and I'll mishear a phrase, and that might actually inspire something later. I might jot that down. So I find that sort of a treasure trove.
Oh, that's great. And I remember there's a poem in your book about autocorrect.
Yes, there is. And yeah, Rose Has Hands.
Do you mind reading that? It completely just reminds me of what you said about these mistakes being just happy accidents.
Yes, let me find it. I think it's on 22. Here it is. All the joys of autocorrect. This is Rose Has Hands. My phone doesn't observe the high holidays, autocorrecting Shana Tova to Shaman Tobacco, Rosh Hashanah to Rose Has Hands. Apples and honey for a sweet new year, or apples and honestly, or news and years, always more than one. Yesterday, my daughter said, out of what felt like nowhere, but must be a real place inside her, when people kidnap kids, do they kill them? Why would someone kill a kid? When I texted my husband this, my phone corrected kill to Killarney, kid to kids. We have two. My phone suggests their names, suggests what the duck, suggests news, years, and honestly, what truth can I tell her? I don't ducking understand. I don't understand ducking any of it.
Wow. And it's
like the funniest, darkest. I don't know whether to giggle at the end or sob. It's And people have done both. Like, people have reached the end of that poem and sort of chuckled, and other people have reached the end and kind of sucked in pain. So it sort of operates, I think, on both registers.
Yeah, I was thinking that too as you're reading it. There's these parts that I start to laugh and then of course not. And I'm like, oh my God.
And then it catches you. Yeah. Yeah, that's technology. It can make things funny and it can also turn things that are not funny at all into sort of very dark jokes.
Yeah, exactly. You're listening to Jefferson Exchange. I'm Angela Decker. We're speaking with poet Maggie Smith about her newest collection, Goldenrod. You can join the conversation by calling 800-838-3760, or you can email us at jx@jeffnet.org. This does bring up another question I had about these difficult truths. You mentioned in the poem, your daughter asks you why do they kill kids, and your books overall they're hopeful, but they do have these really hard truths, these things that we're all grappling with. Is it hard to balance that and still keep your kids and your readers and maybe yourself as well hopeful?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm probably best known for the poem Good Bones, which is completely predicated upon the world being at least half terrible and not telling that to my children. Mm-hmm. And when I wrote that poem, I had a toddler and a preschooler. So of course I was shielding them from the world because I could, and because I felt like that was the responsible thing to do. They weren't listening to public radio yet, or watching the news, or reading the paper. So I was able to keep some of the darker parts of the world from them. And I felt like that was my responsibility. And yet over the past few years, I mean, now I have a middle schooler and a third grader, and I'm still, the balance is a little different now because they're aware of some of the things, frankly, I wish they didn't have to be aware of. And so both as a writer and as a parent, that's the balance. That's, you know, you're offering them the world, and it's beautiful, and it's also terrible. It's both. And it's not, to me, an or. It's not the world is a bad place or it's a good place and people are good or they're bad. It's and, you know, the world is a beautiful and terrifying place, and people are mostly good, but also, and also, some of them are broken. All of us in our own ways are broken. And so being able to kind of hold that negative capability and have more questions than answers is a great thing, I think, for poetry, and it can be a very difficult mode to operate in as a parent when you want to be reassuring, but you need to be honest. And so we're always kind of walking that fine line between protection and honesty. And as they get older, I'm leaning more into the honesty side of things.
No, that makes sense. And you're right, it's a really fine balance. Do you mind reading During Lockdown, I Let the Dog Sleep in My Bed Again?
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's funny. I edited the dog out of the poem.
I love that.
Yeah, in an earlier draft of this poem, the dog comes back at the end. And the dog was kicked out of the bed, I'll tell listeners, because the dog snores and kicks. And so the dog had been kicked out of the bed long before lockdown, but lockdown got so lonely. And, you know, we were all so lacking touch, mm-hmm, that I put up with a snoring, kicking dog in order to have something warm beside me for a little bit of time there. She's been relegated to her crate again. But this is During Lockdown, I Let the Dog Sleep in My Bed Again. Last night, my daughter cried at bedtime of loneliness, she said. She seen the grass, the jagged mountain we need to press into a meadow, and maybe she pictures the drive home from southern Ohio, how the green hills flatten without us doing a damn thing, no sacrifice required. I tell her the steep peak makes loneliness our work, makes an honorable task of it, but I shut myself in the bathroom and cry hard into a hand towel. I walk alone in the snow, squinting up into the big wet flakes letting them bathe my face. I tell myself it is a kind of touch. I tell myself it will do.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And again, that's one of those poems that I found that's a lesson for everybody right there. I wanted to talk a little bit about structure. Your poems, they're so tight. And this book, it's not a big book. It's kind of, it's easy to hold in the hands, and the poems are very easy, just as a reader to read. And do you focus on that a lot? Like, how do you structure your poems? Do you start with a shape?
No, not at all. In fact, I don't type. I've never learned how to properly type. I use my two index fingers.
Oh, wow.
So my brain works a lot faster than my typing fingers. So I write everything longhand first, and that means that it really doesn't have a shape until I get enough down on the page that I feel like it's time to key it into my laptop, and then I can start to kind of think about line length and stanza size and how much white space I want on the page or how much compression I want on the page. So That happens at a later stage, but at the beginning, it's really just me trying to get it down without censoring myself. And I tend to have a lot more on the written page than ends up in the typed poem because I'm a whittler. So as I revise, the poem shrinks, usually rather than grow. I think concision is something that I'm sort of always striving for in my poems. And so they tend to get smaller as I refine them, and I really do pat myself on the back if I get to a 2 or 3 page poem. That, for me, is long. I marvel at people who, you know, could write a book-length poem, because that's just not the way my brain works. I'm always trying to say things as sort of tightly as possible.
Wow. Okay, well, it's done brilliantly. We are speaking with Maggie Smith, author of Goldenrod, her latest collection. We're going to wrap this up. Maggie, thank you very much for coming and speaking with us and sharing this. If you have any other opportunities to join us on the program, we would love to have you back.
Oh, I'd love that. And thanks for having me. This has been a joy.